This morning I'm going to start with a reading from Parker Palmer from his piece, Summer. In the human world, abundance does not happen automatically. It is created when we have the sense of to choose community, to come together to celebrate and share our common store. Whether the scarce resource is money or love or power or words, the true law of life is that we generate more of whatever seems scarce by trusting its supply and passing it around. Authentic abundance does not lie in the secured stockpiles of food or cash or influence or affection, but in the belonging to a community where we can give those goods to others who need them and receive them from others when we are in need. I sometimes speak on college campuses, but the importance of community in academic life, one of the most competitive cultures I know. On one such occasion, following my talk, a man stood in the audience, introduced himself as occupant of the distinguished such-and-such chair of biology, and began what I thought, given his rather pompous introduction, would surely be an attack. Instead, he said simply, "Of course we must learn to live in community with each other. After all, it is only good biology." Biology, the discipline once derived by anxious metaphors like survival of the fittest and nature red in tooth and claw, now had a new metaphor, community. Death had not ceased, of course, but now it is understood as a legacy to the community of abundant life. Here is a summertime truth. Abundance is a communal act, the joint creation of an incredibly complex ecology in which each part functions on behalf of the whole, and in return is sustained by the whole. Community not only creates abundance, community is abundance. If we could learn that equation from the world of nature, the human world might be transformed. Community not only creates abundance, community is abundance. It can be. If we endeavor towards being our better selves, notice I no longer say best selves, because in some ways it takes a lifetime to be our best selves. My goal is just to be a little bit better every single day. My question for our community this week, as we consider this year's theme, Where is the Love, is the first step on this journey. Are we one? The we that I'm speaking about is humankind, yet focusing in on a small slice, today I'm speaking about First Parish. But you could be thinking about your family or work, a small piece of a much larger whole. I've heard some of us question if we would welcome a visitor to First Parish who does not think like us, is not affirming of diversity of thought, identity, and practice. Would we? Could we truly welcome the other? That's a question that came from you. Here's the real question. Do we even tolerate those whom we know and love? Who are the members of this community, members of our family, especially if they behave in a manner that we do not agree with, or possibly dress in a manner that we cannot relate to, or have beliefs that are different than our cadre of acceptable understandings? Do we accept difference among our own ranks? The poor, the transgender, the women, people of another cultural ethnicity or socioeconomic class. Let's take a moment to search our hearts. Let us be honest with ourselves. Have we ever judged another for the slightest of infractions? I want to be judged on the content of my character, not by how I look, so encouraged the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King so many years ago. Are we one? I have fallen victim to being judged by my external appearance, the car I drive, where I live, who I love, and I have been judged, and I have judged others on their external container. I know this only too well. Moment by moment, we must be ever vigilant, reminding ourselves each time, content of one's character. Let that be our mantra as we do this work together. Content of one's character. We are not judge nor jury. We are not perfect, but we know this, right? We know this. And yet the littlest judgment creeps in. And we lose sight of the contents and the focus on the wrapper, the state of one's life, the status, the stats, the materialized resume. Do we pause long enough to ask, who is this other? The being who is not me, the being who is like me maybe, who hopes and dreams and is tender and vulnerable like we are. This is when we need to take a deep, deep breath. Remember loving kindness and beginning again in love. There is this small and wonderful passage in the Gospel of Luke 6:42 that shares, how can you say to your brother, brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly enough to remove the speck from your brother's eye. What is the plank? What is the speck? Maybe it is something that blocks or clouds our vision of the truth of what is really at play. Who are we to see a plank in another's eye or a speck in another's eye? This is where we begin, at this place where we realize and look to and tend to our own planks. We cannot truly be one until we own and forgive ourselves of our faults, our planks, our judgments, our preconceived notions of others, our beliefs based on misinformation and a lifetime of acculturation. Own our planks, resolved and removed. It ain't easy work, folks, but it's worthy. The second step of being one is to learn to truly tolerate one another, including the stuff that we deem is everyone else's imperfections. Trust me, I'm engaging in this personal work myself. I know I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes, but here's the good news. And not just for me. In each moment, we can ask one another, the universe, the spirit of life and love, God, Allah, praise be his name, whomever we call on for forgiveness, and then begin again in love. There is a beloved children's story called Stone Soup. How many people know it? We all know it, right? That's okay, I'm going to remind you again anyways. Many of you have heard the tale. The folk story begins with some travelers, outsiders, who may look different, act different, and are not, as many would say, to be trusted. They come to the village carrying nothing more than an empty cooking pot. Sounds Buddhist more than anything else. Upon their arrival, the villagers are unwilling to share any of their food stores with the hungry strangers. The travelers go to a stream and fill the pot with water and drop in a large stone and place it over a fire. One of the villagers wanders by, becomes curious, and says to them, what are you doing? The strangers answer that we are making stone soup, which tastes wonderful, although it still needs a little bit of garnish to improve the flavor, which they are missing. The villagers does not mind parting with a few carrots to help them out, so the carrots get added to the soup. Another villager walks by inquiring about the pot, and the travelers again mention their stone soup, which has not reached its full potential yet. So the villager tastes it, hands them a little bit of seasoning to help them out. More and more villagers walk by, each adding one more ingredient. Finally, the stone, being inedible, is removed from the pot, and the delicious and nourishing soup is enjoyed by all. Here's my question. Did the strangers trick the villagers, or did they help to unite and transform a community? The answer to this question is in the ear and the mind and heart of the beholder. Community is abundance. When I look out at the world and I see the challenges that we face as humankind, in all earnestness, I am overwhelmed. There is racism, starvation, violence, economic injustice, environmental injustice, harsh weather and climate change, earthquakes, sexism, which is probably caused by the earthquakes or vice versa, homophobia, xenophobia, pipelines and power lines, overpopulation, lack of sanitation, housing and clean drinking water, so on and so forth. On Monday of this week, I drove into Boston to be with my fellow clergy as we marched and stood together at the State House. We spoke and sang out for humankind and about what is right and what is wrong in this world. We gathered disparate community and we made a soup together. The ingredients: economic democracy, pro-labor, anti-poverty, anti-racist policies that provide economic liberation to all people, equality in education, ensure that every child receives access to high-quality, well-funded, constitutionally diverse public education, health care for all, move decisively towards a universal, transparent, and equitable health care system, criminal justice reform, address the continuing inequities on the system for black, brown, and poor white people, and fight the proliferation of guns, equal protection under the law, voting rights, women's rights, LGBTQI rights, labor rights, religious freedom rights, immigrant rights. We stood around the fire of our conviction all morning and part of the afternoon, and we hoped together that our commitment would be heard, seen, acknowledged. What I realized on Monday, once again, is that we are far greater together than we are divided. I wonder what would happen if in our own towns we gathered around the commonality of our issues. Say, for example, if historic Sudbury joined with No Power Lines, who joined with the Sudbury Valley trustees, if the leaders of the town joined and the clergy joined, and we all worked together to show our mutual respect and our conviction to this collective reality that we are creating, what would happen then? Imagine the power of our collective voices. I was so heartened by what I saw on Monday, and I was reminded of our successes last year here at First Parish when the Landscape Committee acknowledged the importance of the solar panels. And they live in the same home, right? Marge and Bruce. And the congregation acknowledged the benefit. The congregation acknowledged the benefit of the terrace and the driveway and the new walkway. We did not see ourselves in competition for funds, but worked together, and we succeeded together. How did it feel? Was it awful? Did we hate it? No, it was kind of good. As I walked around the State House on Monday, we chanted, "Together united, we'll never be divided." And I knew in my heart of hearts that this was true, especially when a homeless man of color in a broken wheelchair rolled into our march. He spoke softly that this was the first time that he had seen his people. My dearest friends, my beloved family, we have the answer to all of our concerns and woes right here at our fingertips. Community is abundance. Together we can. Are we one? I ask you this, are we one? Can we coalesce enough to find the love in our own battered delusion and broken hearts? I'm going to ask a hard thing. It's hard. Take a moment to look at one another. I've done this before. Come on. Take a moment to look at one another. And I mean, not to just glance, but to really look and see one another. It is risky to look. I know, I see it. It's risky to look, and it's risky to be seen. Do you trust your neighbor? Do you trust the person across the room? Look across the room. Do you trust them? We are effectively putting our lives in one another's hands on a daily basis when we walk into this sanctuary, drive our cars, enter a supermarket. Even when we dare to speak out at injustice, we risk everything, and we must be able to trust and be trustworthy. Are we trustworthy?
Are we?
In our gray hymnal, there's a very important reading. It's number 468. Don't turn to it. I'm going to read it to you. But instead of you looking at me or the hymnal, I want you to look around at one another as I read it. And I really want you to take this in. And I know it's not easy work, but I'm asking you. I'm pleading with you. Take these words in. Let them seep into your heart. Let them caress the recesses of your mind, because they're important. We need one another when we mourn and would be comforted. We need one another when we are in trouble and afraid. We need one another when we are in despair, in temptation, and need to be recalled to our better selves again. We need one another when we would accomplish some great purpose and cannot do it alone. We need one another in the hour of our success, when we look to share our triumphs. We need one another in the hour of our defeat, when with encouragement we might endure and stand again. We need one another when we come to die and would have gentle hands prepare us for the journey. All our lives we are in need, and others are in need of us. Let us be inspired by the content of one another's character. Let us be tolerant of the specks and the planks, our faults and disappointments. Let us own our imperfections and be accepting of all of this abundance right in here, out there, everywhere. I do believe wholeheartedly that together, united, we will never be divided, because we are one. We are one. Let us take a few moments in silent meditation. For this we pray. May it be so. Amen.